Recording in a secret location deep in the heart of the Smeelosphere, in a world where everyone rocks a stash like Harold. You're listening to C4 on CanucksHockeyBlog.com, the podcast that wishes it had abs like Chris Higgins.
Welcome to the 13th episode of C4 CHB. That is Chris and Clay's Canucks Hockey Commentary from CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am, as always, Chris Golden at Lightforce on Twitter, joined by virtually Clayton Emo.
Yes, it's at Canuck Clay on Twitter. Looking at your pretty face, Chris, on my computer. And speaking of pretty faces, who are we joined with once again?
The prettiest face of them all, between the three of you, and that's me, Matt Lee, at Matt Lee 980. Thank you again for inviting me onto the podcast.
Well, you know, and I did invite you, actually. You know, we're doing, for the very first time, a virtual podcast. We're all in three different places connecting by satellite, real cheap one, because, you know, JJ doesn't give us much money to spend on this thing. But, you know, it is what it is, right?
Yeah, we'll make do with what we have.
So, boys, it's been a couple of weeks since we last got together. There was this Olympic roster announced. I'd like to point out that every one of the players I had suggested made the roster.
Well, when you choose 49 players, Chris, you only needed to get one out of every two right, where I think Matt and I went with actually trying to predict a proper, what was it, Matt? 21 players, right?
25 players, I believe, is the correct number.
How'd you do, Matt?
Do that well. I think I had maybe 19 of the 25. It would have been a lot better if Martin St. Louis and Claude Giroux were on the team as they should have been.
Yes.
But it's okay.
And I believe I went 22 out of 25, so not bad at all. CHB.
Well, even a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while, Clay.
Don't be racist. And anyways, and then I know CHB collectively, we went 21 out of 25, so not bad.
Yep, that's pretty good.
Yeah. The one thing about the announcement of the team that caught me a little off guard was the amount of lead up to the actual announcement of the players. They had like six or seven different people get on stage to talk about how important hockey is to Canada.
It was so painful, wasn't it?
Well, I was listening to on 1040 on my way into work, and Bro Jake and Dave Pratt actually cut away saying, yeah, actually, no, this is nothing like we thought. We're going to go back to them when we actually recognize who was on stage.
Well, it was a historic day. Politicians, IOC people, everyone wanted to say they were part of that day, and apparently everyone was part of that day.
But how hockey is big in Canada, I get that. I'm surprised that they don't actually do more with the announcement. Like, we're talking like laser light show, fireworks, maybe like trailers on TV. Someone actually on Twitter, and I can't remember who it was, said that by the time they had announced who was playing for Team Canada, LeBron James had already announced the new team he's going to.
That's pretty good. The thing that struck me the most interesting about that is that they had to go into a 10-minute debate as to why hockey was important to Canadians. It's as if Canadians needed another reason. I think Canadians just wanted to hear the roster.
Oh, no doubt. And that's what was most important to Canadians. It's funny that the talking heads had to tell us what they thought was important when we already knew what it was.
Of course. So, speaking of important, Matt and Chris, if you got named to the Canadian Olympic team, how would you want to be introduced? What would be an introduction doing justice to you?
Well, I don't know. Am I supposed to say I want my hometown being said first and the team I play for? Or?
Well, that's normal, but what kind of flash and dash would you want accompanying the announcement?
Well, I don't know. I'd like to say they would say perennial Stanley Cup champion and winner at life or something like that.
Okay.
I just like the road dog Jesse James to be announcing me.
See, Chris, you and I are similar. I was thinking of some big WWE entrance with pyro and smoke.
Oh, well, anyone could do that. I would have had Bruce Buffer be my announcer then to introduce me.
Awesome.
Rewind. Looking for another now. It'll come back to Jokinen, an empty net. Puck in front. Crosby scores.
Daniel to Henrik. Daniel goes to the front. Henrik puts one to the crease. Dalpy out of midair. Took a swing at the puck but missed. Here's Henrik Sedin hooking one to the other side. Daniel Sedin with a shot attempt. Scores! Looked like Zach Dalpy might have tipped it.
So, as always, here we are with Rewind, and we're going to talk a little bit about the week that was. And I think the two most important games that we saw this week, obviously, were the return of the Pittsburgh Penguins to Vancouver with Sidney Crosby at the helm. I think the last time the Penguins were in town, Crosby was on the shelf. And I'll be honest, I actually missed some of that game. It was my inaugural Strata Council meeting that I had to attend. And it was almost as if the Canucks were aware that I was missing the game, because they really didn't show up to play and start producing any offense until I sat down. In fact, when I sat down, they scored three goals and they had a 4-2 lead, which is apparently the safest lead in hockey unless you are in Vancouver, because as we saw, the Canucks actually lost 5-4 in a shootout. Matt, what are your thoughts on that the Pittsburgh game?
Well, I mean, it was interesting because, you know, the way the Vancouver Canucks have played lately, it's like they've lost games in such brutal fashion up until that moment that you'd think that a 2-goal lead with a minute and a half left was safe. And lo and behold, Chris Letang scores the goal, and it's all of a sudden a 1-goal game. And then, of course, the guy who had been silent all night, Sidney Crosby, scores the tying goal about 17 seconds later, and now it's a tie game. If you're a Vancouver Canuck fan who had been so jaded up until that point, you're probably feeling even more jaded after that moment, because it seemed like it was a brand new low for the Canucks when it came to defending third period leads.
You guys, that was painful. It was painful. It was painful because the Canucks actually did what other teams had been doing to them, and they actually scored twice within 17 seconds, and everyone's all excited. Chris, I'm sure you were excited getting out of a Strata meeting. It's 4-2 Vancouver. And then it's not just that Pittsburgh scored twice in the last minute and 11 seconds. It's the way they did it. Within 16 seconds of each other, the third goal off of Ryan Kessler's butt, the fourth goal, Kunitz doing a wonderful play, batting the puck out of midair. It was just... it was ludicrous. That's what it was. It was ludicrous.
Well, the thing about those last two goals that Pittsburgh scored was when they got the first one, weren't you sitting there knowing that, oh, they're going to score another one? There was too much time left on the clock. And it was as almost if the Canucks knew that that was going to be the case. And on the ensuing faceoff after the third goal, the Canucks win the faceoff, but they're so jittery, they win the faceoff right back into their own end, allowing Fleury to be on the bench, and then that extra attacker, I mean, the Penguins are just killer by having that man advantage. And I think Tortorella had said it's just a mindset thing. Yeah, I think the Canucks were trying hard not to lose, and I'm a firm believer that when you're trying hard not to lose, you're not trying to win. And that's a problem, because if you're not trying to win, you're going to lose more than you will.
And you know what, this might be more prudent for the glass half full, half empty segment, but all things considered, this is still a Pittsburgh team that was very good entering this game. So for the Vancouver Canucks to get at least a point out of it was positive. And I think Torts expressed that in particular. As much as a normal coach would be down after giving up a lead like that, Tortorella would not take any sort of negatives from it. He wanted to look at it from a glass half full perspective. And he says that getting at least the 1 point was very valuable for the Canucks in the standings. So there's that to consider as well.
The other player I'd actually like to talk about from that game was Zach Cassian. That goal that he scored was just a beauty, knocking the puck out of the air onto the ice and putting it right back upstairs. You had Fleury doing jumping jacks to try to save it, and he was well in position. To me, that's a goal scorer's goal, and it's nice to see that Cassian's starting to play responsibly, as well the fact that he's starting to actually get these opportunities. When do we see Cassian find his way to the first line?
Well, it seems like everyone's getting an audition on the first line except Zach Kassian. I mean, we saw Zach Dalpy a couple nights ago playing with the Sedin line, but it seems like everyone has had a turn, except with maybe David Booth, who we'll get into a little bit later. But for me, I mean, we've seen this from Zach Kassian before. He's capable of being a top-line player, but the big word here is consistency, and we haven't seen it enough. So as much as you want to laud Zach Kassian for his big goal against the Pittsburgh Penguins that night, we haven't seen him string together consistent efforts of that kind of production over the course of time.
And Kassian did have a great night. He did have a goal and assist. He had 18 minutes of ice time. But it's funny, just as he starts to get better, starts to be more consistent, as Matt said, guess what? Someone else is going to come back to the lineup. And again, Kassian will be knocked down further. And it doesn't look like he's going to get a chance on the top line, at least unless something else happens to someone like Burrows. Hopefully not. But Burrows is the one coming back and is just going to push Kassian further back in the lineup.
Yeah. But before we get into all of that, let's talk a little bit about the next game. That was against St. Louis. So the Canucks, prior to playing St. Louis, were winless in 2014, going with a record of 0-2-3. And obviously, being that 2014 needed to get off to a better start, having St. Louis, which is one of the hottest teams in the league, come into town, things weren't really going in the Canucks' favor. But the Canucks pull out a 2-1 hard-fought win, although I must admit, I was one of many out there who was probably sitting on the edge of his seat, hoping and praying that the fire drill of the extra man on ice for St. Louis didn't actually turn into another tie game and potential loss of 2 points. But Clay, what were your thoughts about that St. Louis game?
Oh, my thoughts. If I could think in my sleep, that was horrible. The first period, boring. Second period, boring. Third period, not bad, and especially as we got closer to the end. But I just thought for a matchup between two playoff teams, you know, a potential first-round matchup, I just thought the game was really slow, really void of emotion. And I felt bad for someone like Matt, who I presume was there to cover it. Were you there, Matt?
Yeah, I was there. I mean, I don't know what game you were watching. I thought it was actually pretty intense. It was very physical because these games between the Blues and the Canucks always seem to be. There's always been that general dislike between them for whatever reason. I think it probably centers around David Backes and Ryan Kessler for whatever reason again. But, you know, I saw a team, especially a Vancouver Canucks team, that was juggled by John Tortorella pretty early in the game. In the first period, you recall that Tortorella put his lines into a blender. He put Zach Dolphy up on the top line with the Sedins, and he bumped Mike Santarelli down from the second line all the way down on the fourth line. But the funny thing about that is, it actually provided two of the Canucks' two goals. I mean, you saw Mike Santarelli team up with that fourth line of Dale Weiss, and I believe it was, who am I missing here? Dale Weiss and Tom Cecito?
No, Darren Archibald.
Dale Weiss and Darren Archibald, that's right. And, I mean, for a guy like Mike Santarelli, who has been, you know, inconsistent the last few games, he actually found a way to make those two relevant, and he managed to score what became the eventual game-winning goal. So, you know, you applaud John Tortorella because he managed to put those lines in a blender and it helped the Canucks grind out that win.
Yeah, and Clay, actually, further to Matt's point, even Tortorella agreed with him that it was a hard-fought game by saying that he thought after a really tentative first period that we started playing better. You can see we're fighting some confidence. Hopefully this will help us. And that's sort of how I viewed it. Now, I'll admit it wasn't the most entertaining of games, so much so that I was trading cat pictures online while I'm passively watching the game on TV. But I must admit that it does concern me that Zach Dolphy is now on the Canucks' first line. In fact, I think, was it the first three shots, two were from Dolphy, one was from Cestito. Is this a growing trend where the Canucks are now fighting the puck over four lines, when in past it was really only one?
I think it's just a matter of time. I think they're biding their time until Burrows gets back, whenever that's going to be. And I think, you know, Dolphy, in John Tortorella's eyes, earned the spot, earned the ice time, and good on him for making the most of it. And I think if any player is put in that spot, it's on the onus is on them, obviously, to do well. And he did so. So it doesn't bother me too much. I'll trust you, Matt. I know you know hockey. Yes, it was a hard-fought game. I just didn't think it was the most entertaining game I've ever seen. That's
no,
for sure.
It certainly was. It wasn't an oil painting, but especially if you watched that last minute, you have to at least admit that the entertainment factor was there in that dying minute. I mean, it was certainly interesting to watch the Canucks take part in this Chinese fire drill in their own end because it seemed like the Canucks were about a couple seconds away from having the St. Louis Blues tie up that game and have it go to overtime, where, let's be honest, the shootout was probably looming.
Well, one of my good friends who's a priest, he was the one who used my tickets for that game, and I joked around saying maybe it was divine intervention that the Canucks actually completed their lead and the win in the last minute.
Exactly.
And quite frankly, though, if the entertainment in the game is the underlying story of the Canucks closing out a win, that actually does concern me. But regardless, it's 2 points against one of the top teams in the league. And as we're going to hear in our look ahead later on, maybe this is the sign of things to come.
It's going to be legend. Wait for it.
You guys miss me?
No.
Thanks.
Well, I just want to say, with me, you keep promising and you never deliver.
Okay, I'll step my game up starting next time.
Well, you better, because you know what? We expect a lot out of you, Clayton.
No, we really don't.
That's true. We don't actually know.
What we get out of Clay, I'm pretty much happy with.
Thank you.
It's a bonus.
Well, she does look better. She does sound better. So really, why am I here, honestly?
See, if I take the handlebars off, I totally look like a predator.
Well, Matt started his Movember beer, but he started last November.
Worst prize ever. Did she just say it was pretty porn starry?
Boring story.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
I've always been told that I have a face for radio.
Dairy. Legendary.
All right, gentlemen. It's half full, half empty, where we discuss who we're high and who we're low on right now. And I'm going to begin with the guy who has seen the least amount of ice time among Canuck players recently, and that's David Booth. He's been one of the most polarizing figures on that Vancouver Canucks roster all season. Clay, let's go to you. Before I begin with David Booth, though, I do want to mention, at the end of the St. Louis game, I saw David Booth leave Rogers Arena almost immediately. He didn't look happy, and I know he was scheduled to show up at the Canucks Super Skills on the weekend, did not show up. What does that tell you about where his head is at and where maybe he's thinking, has he checked out mentally on this Canucks team?
Okay, I'm going to look at this as objectively as I can. I know David Booth wasn't at the Super Skills, and yes, I read your tweet about David Booth not looking happy on Friday. Tortorella did say that Booth was banged up, whether Booth asked for that time off, whether Tortorella gave it to him off. And at the practice immediately the day after Super Skills, David Booth looked fired up. He looked motivated. He looked ready to go. Yeah, I don't know where his head's at. I just, you know, I wouldn't be happy too if I was sat for two straight games watching Darren Archibald take my spot. So, you know, we'll see. Maybe Torts has motivated him to once again come back. Last time he did this, David Booth had a really good run of 4 or 5 games, got 4 or 5 points in there. So maybe there's method to Torts' madness.
But what has David Booth been doing wrong the last few games that he's been getting scratched or he's been sat out in the first place? Is it in fact the injuries, or do you think that he's just not showing this kind of effort consistently enough that John Tortorella thinks there's more there and he hasn't shown it?
Well, Booth needs to skate. That's the first thing. That's one of his attributes. Is he's got to be one of the quickest skaters out there. And I saw him working on that on practice. The other thing Booth needs to do, he's relatively big body, especially compared to a lot of our other forwards. He needs to hit, or at least be able to be hit and be physical, make a difference. He wasn't doing any of those two things enough where Torts said he didn't even notice him, didn't know where he was.
Well, and that's where I sort of see his issue is that, well, maybe, yeah, he needs to skate. And we did start to see that chemistry start to develop between him and Cassian. He is a big body on the ice. He has, you know, the opportunity to impose his will if he were to believe he can. And maybe it's a confidence issue. Maybe that's why he's not doing so. But he's really a waste of space. And if you look at someone like Darren Archibald, who, you know, he wants to play his way on the team and knows the only way to do it is I gotta hit everything that moves, I gotta skate hard, I gotta hustle, and ultimately tell the coach that I'm willing to play. Really, to me, that's what David Booth hasn't been doing, and, you know, he's a guy who should know better.
All right, and, you know, David Booth is going to have company in the forward ranks very shortly because Alex Burrows returning to the Vancouver Canucks lineup, hopefully by this coming Saturday against the Calgary Flames. Chris, with Alex Burrows returning, does that make David Booth the odd man out a little bit?
Well, at this point, it looks like David Booth is the odd man out. It I remember when we were talking last, we were curious if it was going to be someone like Yannick Hansen, but I think Hansen has simply just been miscast. It seems every time he gets put on the first line or a top line, he forgets to play his game. But once he comes down in the lineup, all of a sudden he starts playing that sort of ferocious forechecking irritant on the ice. So someone like David Booth, who can't seem to fit anywhere on any line at this point, I mean, who else do you pull? He's just the easiest piece to move.
Clay, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely think it doesn't get any easier for Booth to crack the lineup. You know, I could see Weiss or Archibald also sitting. I think any of those three players, everyone else is going pretty good, as we talked about. Dalpy, Kassian, Sestito, all those guys, they won't be benched. So, yeah, with Bros coming back, I think you look at either Booth, some combination of Booth, Archibald, and or Weiss. Two of those three need to sit to make room for Burrows. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I was going to say the exact same thing because, you know, one name that we haven't mentioned that would normally be considered the healthy scratch on most occasions is Tom Cecito. But with the way he's been playing the last few games, can you sit a guy like Tom Cecito? Because whether he's been in front of the net on the power play or he's been causing havoc along the boards making hits, you have to admit that you've liked what you've seen from Tom Cecito so far.
He is so big when he's benched, he should just count for two people.
Yeah.
Chris, are you a fan of Tom Cecito?
For what Tom Cecito provides in the little time that he plays, I've got no issues with him. He seems to know that his role is, you know, quite simple. He's the enforcer when need be. If he's on the power plays in front of the net, acting, you know, as the impenetrable wall, a goaltender can't see around. You know, good forecheck. Keep in mind, this is a guy who's still playing limited minutes, even though he's been provided that opportunity on the you know, first power play unit and such. I'm actually kind of curious why we would say it wouldn't be Sestito coming out, but Zach Dalpy.
I don't know. I mean, again, you've seen Zach Dalpy perform pretty admirably on the Sedin line, and I'm not saying he would continue his scoring streak, and I'm using air quotes here over our Google Hangout. I'm not saying we're going to continue seeing Zach Dalpy produce on that level, but can you really pull a guy like Zach Dalpy off your roster when he's been, you know, consistently putting together some pretty strong performances?
Well, no, that's the thing. We can't. We can't see a Sestito being benched because he's been contributing, he's been playing, he's been really playing as his role has suited him. The one player I could see as being on the bubble if it wasn't someone like David Booth is Dale Weiss. I mean, obviously Archibald seems to make the most sense as the player that that disappears. But Archibald has played, again, I think he's done everything that's been asked of him, and he's played well as such. So it's just an interesting predicament that the Canucks are in. But I don't think that of the players that they would choose to sit to get Bros back in the lineup, we're really too concerned with that choice, especially based on, you know, Canucks or Torts' history with the Canucks so far.
So quickly, one-word answers. When Bros comes back, is he put with the Sedins, yes or no?
That's an automatic yes for me. I think you have no choice but to put Alex Bros back with the Sedins. It's where he's most comfortable. I think that's where he has the most chemistry. And I think logically, the Sedins could use a little bit of a kick in the butt right now. And having a familiar face like Alex Burrows on their line might help rejuvenate them a little bit more.
How do I say no? Who supplants Burrows on the first line with the Sedins, considering that every experiment so far hasn't passed muster, although Zach Dalpy, maybe. I mean, he got that opportunity and he gets a goal.
Okay, go ahead, Matt.
Clay, the player that has fit the most with the Sedins has been Ryan Kesler, but even that magic lost its... I mean, we saw the magic fade after a certain period of time, and now we're seeing that Ryan Kesler is a better player on his own away from the Sedins. So I think, logically, you've seen guys like Yannick Hansen get a look with the Sedins. You've seen guys like Zach Kasten get a look with the Sedins. You've seen Zach Dalpy most recently get that look with the Sedins. But of all three of those players, Alex Burrows has been the one that has made the most sense right from the start. So I don't see any reason why you don't see Alex Burrows getting put back on the Sedin line right when he comes back into the lineup.
All right, you guys probably didn't hear the one-word answer, but this is way better, actually. This is much more entertaining and more informative. Okay, if we put Kesler and Higgins, as they always play together, as you know, as our second line, who plays with them then? Do we stick with Kassian, or does Santarelli come back up?
Go with Chris first.
Yeah, I totally fit on the second line. based on his play right now, I am okay with Cassian. And I think, I don't know if it's a maturity thing where he is starting to mature as a player, or if he's figured out that he needs to play consistently, as, you know, Tortorella has suggested. But Cassian hasn't looked like he would hurt the Canucks as he previously did. Now, he still has, you know, some distance to go, but I'd say he's earned his way up to the second line. Not to say Santarelli has earned his way off as much as Cass has earned on. I just like the look of that line with Cass's eyes.
I'm going to disagree there. I think while Zach Cassian has played pretty well the last few games, it would be premature to suggest he suddenly has the hockey sense that comes with being a second-line player. I think you need to have a player who has great hockey sense, and I still think Mike Santarelli is the best fit there. Yeah, he struggled the last few games, and that's why he got bumped down to the fourth line. But really, that was just because he needed to give the rest of his forwards a little bit of a fuel injection. So I think you'll see Mike Santarelli go back to the top, the second line with Chris Higgins and Ryan Kessler when Alex Burrows returns, because really that's the line that you saw a lot of chemistry start to develop. And then maybe you'll see David Booth reunited with Zach Cassian on a third line, probably with Yannick Hansen or something like that.
Yeah, and that leaves all the rest of the guys, Richardson, Hansen, Booth, Cecilio, Dalpe, Archibald, Weiss, all to, I guess, fight out for the last six spots then. Okay, makes sense to me.
Let's go to the defense now, guys. And you've seen the injuries start to take their toll on the blue line. I got to ask you guys, which defenseman is most missed in that top six? Is it Alex Edler or is it Ryan Stanton?
Ryan Stanton. And you know, it pains me to say that because Alex Edler obviously should be the player I say the most. But I think the Canucks, when you consider how they have players who require the right pairing, Stanton is the one who's missed the most. You've got Tanev, who's steady, who's solid. You've got Stanton, who was playing that way prior to his injury. And I think Tanev and Stanton are the two players that help protect you from some of the gaffes that we've seen Garrison as well as Bieksa commit.
I agree with Chris. It's crazy to think that someone would miss Stanton over Edler, but you just look at their stats too. Stanton was playing at a plus four clip. Edler is minus 12, and yes, not all of those are his fault, but it is one of the many statistics that we can look at. Stanton, yes, he's a little bit risky. He goes a little bit crazy, does some weird pinches sometimes, but overall he's very effective and certainly one of the surprises in the first half of the season.
Well, while you guys might miss Ryan Stanton more than Alex Edler, the reality is that the Canucks are likely going to get Alex Edler back into their lineup before we see Ryan Stanton even play, because Edler is skating once again. It looks like his return also imminent. Is there any way regarding Alex Edler for him to turn his season around? Because, you know, he's struggled like you guys have mentioned, but can you see a scenario where he starts to turn it on a little bit?
For me, absolutely. Yeah, I think he's had some time to watch some of the games from up top as he's rehabbing. And I just think, obviously, Edler is an upgrade over Corrado. Obviously, it strengthens the defense. And I just think if he plays a simple game and starts to hit, you've seen what Ham Hughes has done in the last month, maybe trying to play his way on Team Canada, but unloading the hip check. I think Edler's got to get back to a simple yet very aggressive and strong game. Chris, what about you?
Well, on paper, I can't disagree, but you know, how many times have we been waiting for that train to arrive where we're going to see Edler return to form? And we say it after every season. I mean, there's been a handful, but every injury, anytime he misses some play, all of a sudden, oh, well, we hope it's, you know, the Edler of 2010 and 2011 that we see return. And that never happens. It's like, I kid you not, we've been waiting at that train station to spite ourselves.
Yeah, I'm pessimistic just as you guys are. I mean, Alex Edler has been so on and off the last few years, ever since he signed that extension. And really, that concerns me, the fact that he hasn't really gotten back to that form that we saw in 2011 when he cracked 50 points for the first time in his career. One thing I do want to mention with regarding to defensemen is Dan Hamhuis. You mentioned this, Chris. He had that big hip check the other night on Max Lapierre against the St. Louis Blues. He said after the game that it was the first time he really started to feel comfortable making that hit again since the 2011 Stanley Cup Final when he did that to Milan Lucic. Does it surprise you guys that it took him that long to sort of mentally recover enough that he felt confident to make that hit?
Well, I'll take credit for making that comment, but it was actually Clay that referenced it. As to this, being mentally ready to actually, throw that hip of massive destruction, how many times have we done something in our life where it turned out catastrophic, something simple, and it takes us a while before even to attempt, in our mind, it races through that we're not ready. And I think that's what we saw. I mean, that injury was, I think, one of the first in his career of any, substantial length. And look what it did to the Canucks' chances in the Stanley Cup finals. I think the loss of Ham Hughes was the greater impact than the loss of Aaron Rome.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, given that I think, given that hockey players are players of instinct and of habit, and that was, I think it's natural that he hesitated just because he remembers the devastating effect it did have on him. And I agree with Chris, it was one of maybe the single biggest impact as to why we lost that series, not having him. So it makes sense to me that still 2 years later is still playing on his mind. But it's been so good to see him unleash that check in the last, three or four times in the last month, and just being stronger overall. But never being a professional athlete, I can't say for sure. Matt, I would turn to you and ask you your opinion on that.
Well, yeah, like you said, it's creatures of habit, and Dan Ham Hughes, like every other hockey player, is a creature of habit. But I think that we can all agree here that Dan Ham Hughes, with that hip check back in his arsenal, not only makes him a more entertaining player to watch, I think it makes him a little bit more of a dangerous defender to watch, because of the fact that you're going to start to see a few more players be a little less likely to come down the wing like that, because of the fact they know that Dan Ham Hughes could be making that play against them. So I think that just adds to his arsenal of him being able to be such a good defender. The other thing I want to bring up among defensemen is the play of Kevin Bieksa and Jason Garrison. Are we happy with how those two have been playing? Because we've seen in at least the last couple games, Jason Garrison has struggled a little bit defensively.
But I think we talked about this in previous podcasts, and it's my theory that both Garrison and Bieksa are they play dependent on the pairing. So whomever is on the other side to them dictates how they play. And when they don't have a partner who they're comfortable with, that's when we see their play waver. Bieksa, we've heard Tortorella refer to him as a gunslinger. Well, if we're going to say he's a gunslinger, he's essentially Doc Holliday. And if you've read anything about Doc Holliday, the guy was wild. You didn't know what you were going to get from one day to the next. Garrison, on the other hand, I don't know what's up with him, in so much as, how many times have we seen him just throw that puck blindly up the ice, not even off the glass, and he's been getting caught flat-footed. I can't explain that one.
Yeah, especially when you put the fact that the two have been playing together recently, it seems like an experiment that has been so bad you wonder why it wasn't split up in the first place. Clay, does it surprise you at all that they had been spending so much time together as a pairing?
It does, and I joked earlier about Ryan Stanton doing some untimely pinches and some crazy rushes. I think he learned that from Bieksa, because Bieksa is the one where he just gets the puck behind his net. You can see him. He starts to move his body upright, and he just starts to make his way all the way down the ice. With Edler coming back, it balances the lineup more, and I could see, at least Bieksa and Garrison not having to play together and Edler joining one of those two perhaps. I just think Garrison and Bieksa, especially when it comes to offensive potential, we can afford to split them up so we don't have the defensive liability that sometimes they may cause together.
I sometimes get this suspicion that Kevin Bieksa would make a better forward than he would a defenseman, just because we've seen him lead the rush so many times. Do you guys get the idea that maybe Kevin Bieksa should be getting the Brent Burns treatment here a little bit?
Well, does he have... I'm not going to discount it.
I mean, they're different players. Brent Burns is a big body that skates extremely well. But Kevin Bieksa seems to have these sort of tendencies to pinch in with the puck that it almost makes too much sense for him not to be a forward.
Well, agreed. I mean, how often have you seen Bieksa, when he even carries the puck into the offensive zone? He's like Kessler. He's going to try to go and somehow get through five players. So if we do put Bieksa up on the front like Brent Burns, who do we replace him with on the blue line?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just speculating. But, I mean, we've seen the fact that the Canucks seem to have an extra defenseman in their ranks when they're healthy, that it seems like if the Canucks were struggling up front, Kevin Bieksa playing forward wouldn't be such a horrible idea.
Well, Bieksa ends up playing before Booth, and Booth has a right to be mad, I think.
Let's round this discussion out with the goaltending. Roberto Luongo skating. He will join the Canucks on their 3-game road trip to California. Let's begin with Eddie Lack, though. Have we been happy with how he has performed in Luongo's absence?
Absolutely. I think none of the losses you can really pin on him. A lot of them have been close meltdowns when they're outmanned in the last minute of the game. And I don't think he's had a shaky start. They all haven't been spectacular, but I certainly wouldn't say that he was the reason for any of our losses.
Well, I would almost say that while he's not been the reason for the losses, he's been the reason for the fact that the Canucks have been able to get some of the points they have. The night after Luongo's last game, you know, the Canucks go and follow that up with another game of where they're letting in, 45 to 50 shots on net. Like, if you're a goaltender, I mean, I hear it that they like seeing the puck, and the more they see it, the better they get into the groove, especially if they're stopping it. But the Stork's been playing well.
All right, guys, and with Roberto Luongo returning to the Vancouver Canucks lineup, it looks like he's going to at least get the chance to start for Team Canada in Sochi. Are you guys worried about him getting overexerted a little bit with the Olympics and then the stretch drive coming up after the Olympics?
This is a tough question to answer because Luongo normally plays well when he's in the groove. Like if he gets the gameplay, he sees the puck. He's a very streaky goaltender. Where I have some pause for concern, though, is the fact that he is really coming off, two separate injuries. I mean, they are somewhat related, but, how healthy is he? And ultimately, would he benefit from a couple of weeks off? Well, if he's not 100% healthy, damn straight he would.
Overall, I'm not worried. I think you look at the last 2 years, one of them was a lockout shortened year. The other one, he was splitting time or at least giving more of his games to Schneider. I think he's ready to take on 60, 65 games. He won't have to again this year because of the injuries and because of Eddie Lack. I think something like the Olympics will motivate him, will inspire him to play well. And I can't see it helping the Canucks and him overall, his play, when he comes back after the Olympics at the end of February and trying to lead this team into a strong playoff run. All right, it's now time to look ahead, and the Canucks go on the road for 3 straight games, Monday night in L.A., Wednesday night in Anaheim, and Thursday night in Phoenix. Now, Chris and Matt, these are 3 teams that the Canucks are either chasing or are being chased by, basically 3 of the strong perennial Western Conference powerhouses. How important? No, of course it's important. I can't stand it when an interviewer says, how important is it to get a good road trip? But what would be a successful road trip for you guys out of the 6 points?
4 out of 6 for me.
Well, and I was actually going to go and set the bar even higher. I think we're at this stage in the season where we need to start getting points against some of these conference rivals.
That is true as well.
You look at Phoenix, who's got currently 2 games in hand on us, and they're only 6 points back.
And
LA and us have an equal number of games. We're 2 points back on LA, and it would be nice to start to close that gap. I mean, right now, as of today, the Canucks are sitting in 7th in the Western Conference. Now, if we get 4-6, I'm not going to go and complain about that, but I think we need to close these games out in regulation. And if not, that's for the 4 points. If we close it out, fine. But if not, we need all 6.
Yeah, that's a good point, Chris. I'm just going to add to those thoughts. I mean, I don't want to say this is the most important road trip for the Vancouver Canucks this season, but it's a very vital road trip considering the teams that they're playing and the shape of the Pacific Division and how it's shaping up right now. Because right now the Canucks are 2 points back of LA. They have the same amount of games in hand. So right now the Canucks have a chance to pull even with the Kings, who have struggled recently and can really start to make up some ground. Because I think for the Vancouver Canucks, they really want to get out of that wild card position and into the top 3 of the Pacific Division. So the game against the Kings is probably the most vital of the 3-game road trip.
And it's one thing to be giving up points or losing to the Tampa Bays and the Philadelphias and the Pittsburghs of the world. You're right. They're part of the Eastern Division. But it's against these teams, the teams that we are fighting with, that we need to make hay. So given that, Matt, what do you expect the first game of the trip, Monday night in L.A., a repeat of just a game they played just 6 days, a week ago, a 3-1 loss in L.A.? It's crazy that they're going down there twice in 10 days.
Well, you know what? It's better that they get it all out of the road, out of the way now, getting these trips to L.A. out of the way now, because they want to come back to Vancouver and host L.A. with a little bit of momentum on their side. So that's why I also think that this game is important, because if I'm not mistaken, the Canucks have hosted L.A. once this year. I'm not sure.
Yes.
Either way, they have the last – they're going to have a couple more hosting L.A., and I think that if they can get one win in L.A., it goes a long way to showing that they can beat this great team and that they can beat them at home and maybe get a couple extra points down the road against them.
I was just, you know, before I get into this, didn't we just do this road trip?
Yeah. Yeah, but they added Phoenix this time.
Yeah, well, the thing that I don't get, and I get, you know, it's a weird season because of the Olympics, but this is an anomaly where, like, I kid you not, it's been, what, not even really a week and a half, and we're already watching the Canucks go back down facing these, you know, not must-win, but some will say important games, you know, both in Anaheim and L.A., and to that effect, even Phoenix. But, yeah, I think the Canucks, even having sort of watched L.A. just roll them, In all the trips down to the Staples Center, I think they need to actually stand up for once. If the Canucks can't win, they better, you know, win the war of attrition and show the Kings that they're not going to be, you know, ruled once more.
Oh yeah, and I mean, how many times have we seen the Canucks physically grinded down by the Kings, especially along the boards? That's where the Kings win their games, is along the boards, and they lose a lot of those puck battles. So if the Canucks are going to lose this game on the scoreboard, they should at least be battling very hard physically against this Kings team that, again, has traditionally succeeded in that area of the game.
Now, whereas the road trip a week ago was back-to-back games, LA and Anaheim, this time there's a one-day break, and then they play in Anaheim on Wednesday night. The scene of the crime last time, where Anaheim scored with a minute and a half left and then scored with 1 second left in overtime. Chris, what do you expect from this game, Vancouver-Anaheim, on Wednesday night?
Well, I think the game against Anaheim will be much the same as what we had seen in the past, and this is another tough team to play. And you look at all of the teams in the Pacific now, and really they're, you know, hard teams to face. Obviously, not all teams are equal to the task, but having seen that work against the Canucks, Anaheim's going to come out. They're going to come out strong. Even when the Canucks were holding on to that late lead, you just felt in the back of your mind that Anaheim was going to somehow find a way to manufacture that point. So watching us go back down there again, I think that's another example game where the Canucks need to come in hard-nosed, blue-collar, and work their butts off.
I'm curious to see where the Canucks are at mentally going into that game, because, like we said, I think giving up an overtime winner with 1 second left does loom large on a team. It does make you think a little bit. So I want to see how the Canucks can recover from something like that going forward here. This is an Anaheim team that has been just dominant at home. So for the Vancouver Canucks, if they can find a way to get at least one extra point from the Anaheim Ducks in this tilt, I think that goes a long way towards their confidence and recovering from what they had done a week prior.
Awesome. And then the Canucks wind up the road trip against a team not as physical per se as LA and Anaheim, but still a tough team nonetheless, and that's in Phoenix. Last time they played each other was at home. The Canucks squeaked out a 3-2 overtime win on a Chris Higgins winner. And what do we expect from this game as they wrap up their three-game road trip? Let's start with you, Chris.
Well, going down to Phoenix, it's always a fun trip, considering the plethora of Canucks fans that happen to either live there or head down for the cheap vacation. So it is almost like a home game. But, you know, it is a game that the Canucks have to win. If they're struggling for points, they have to make sure that they don't see that four-point gap close where Phoenix gets to keep the two games in hand, yet gets 2 points for free. So for my money, that's a game the Canucks win.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Chris, and I'll just go back to what Clay said about the Coyotes having those two games in hand. Right now, this is where the Canucks use up one of those games in hand against the Phoenix Coyotes, and if they can get 2 points, that goes a long way towards putting some distance between them and Phoenix, who, let's be honest, deserve to be in the playoffs the way that they've played so far. But the thing is, the Vancouver Canucks are, again, trying to get out of that wild card position and into the actual top three of the Pacific Division. And by getting 2 points against the Phoenix Coyotes, it can go a long way to getting some separation. Let's be honest, this entire road trip is very important to the Vancouver Canucks. They have to get, like Chris said, maybe 6 points for this to be a successful road trip.
And speaking of 6 points, they return home. And funny, after LA, Anaheim, Phoenix, they get the Calgary Oilers and Nashville's of the world. So we'll see what happens there.
It's nice to rebound from a Pacific Division road swing to getting the easy teams, isn't it?
We'll see what happens.
Well, here we are, my favorite time of every podcast. As you know, it's when we start getting some feedback from you, our listeners, our readers, and occasionally when we do CHB TV, our viewers. Now, we thought we'd mix it up a little bit, seeing as we are all connecting via satellite, and we decided to skip Ask CHB. But
so it's no longer your favorite segment?
Well, no, it's... Well, I guess not.
I'll take you to my segment this time, just for this one podcast only.
Well, I hear I had this great segue about how we went extra special by giving you even more haiku, but
that's what this podcast needs, is more Clay airtime, isn't it?
Well, Clay, what time is it?
My friends, it is time for CHB Haiku. Yes, it's that time where we channel the power of the 575. I know it's Matt's favorite time. Chris, it's soon to be your favorite time. And, of course, it's my favorite time. A haiku, traditional Japanese poem, a five-syllable first line, a seven-syllable second line, and a five-syllable third line, making a total of 17. As always, I have two from the readers, one from me, and I love instant reaction from both you, Chris, and you, Matt. Here we go. Chris, this one's for you. Patrick Johnson, at Rising Action, writer for The Province, he writes, why won't CHB ever let Patrick Johnston on? He's really fun. Chris.
Well, instant reaction? Well, first of all, the guy's mainstream. He's pro. Why would we want mainstream on this podcast?
I'm sitting here rolling my eyes at the both of you right now.
Why is that, Matt?
Because I'm part of the mainstream, too. So you guys are really just using me for my producer skills, aren't you?
No comment.
Patrick Johnson is the best thing that's not in this podcast. Patrick Johnson, we are going to get you on a podcast before Chris is on a music video with Clay.
Well, wow. You could go next year and that'd probably still happen.
No comment. I will move on to the next one. Matt, this one's for you. And this one's inspired by the Super Skills competition from the weekend where Ryan Kessler's son, Riker, scored on Eddie Lack. I think we've all seen the highlights. Here we go, Matt. Instant reaction. And this is from Brent Mack at B_C Mack. And just so you know, he is coming back. He is with a vengeance. He is trying to vindicate himself from his 19-syllable showing last time. Here we go. Little Kessler scores, Eddie deserves an Oscar, super skills abound. Matt.
Well, you know what? If the Vancouver Canucks ever need another guy to play on Ryan Kessler's wing, who better than his son?
I don't know. His son looks a little small.
Yeah, but so is Mike Santarelli. They're practically the same size.
That's true. It's true enough.
Brent, thank you for vindicating yourself. That was good, and that was indeed 17 syllables. Lastly, I got one for both of you to react to. Alex and Alex, need both of them in lineup. Sure hope that it's soon.
Well, I agree the Canucks need Alex, but I don't think they necessarily need Alex.
Well, but if they don't have Alex and they have Alex, how do we know which Alex is the right Alex?
Well, we know which Alex is the right Alex, and the right Alex will be there for the Vancouver Canucks when they need him the most, just as he was there for them in Game 7 of the Chicago Series in 2011.
Why aren't you guys a bunch of smart Alex?
Oh, wow, that was horrible.
Thank you. As always, send in your 17-syllable creations when we call out for them. And thank you for listening to this, another stellar edition of CHB Haiku.
The power of the 575.
Boom. Well, here we are at the end of our first virtual podcast. I'm feeling pretty good about this one, boys. How about you?
You know what? Aside from the voices going a little weird, like digitally every now and then, it's been a pretty good success.
Yeah, you know, thankfully, people, you know, don't get to see us today because, Matt, you've sure let yourself go.
Yeah, Matt, wear some clothes next time, please.
You guys said it was clothing optional.
Yeah, that was us, all right.
Although this may help us get some people, not that we're not happy, the three of us, but maybe now the drive to Richmond, that's not an excuse now. It can't scare people off if we know how to do this in the future.
Well, you know who we have to get is noted friend of the show, Milt Siegel, in on this podcast.
Yeah, you know, Richmond Colt grad, Paul DeBron.
Can't go wrong, brothers. Can't go wrong.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I do want to talk about before we take off is a Canucks tweet-up that's coming up. Yeah, we have a Canucks tweet-up this week on I believe it's Thursday, January 16th, at Boston Pizza, Lougheed Highway. So as you've probably heard in a previous podcast, tweet-ups are all sorts of fun, lots of prizes, lots of things happening. Chris Palliser of the Beat 94.5 will be hosting, and I plan on making the trip. Matt, we're coming out to your country, so you going to come out to this one?
Wait, where is it on Thursday?
It's at the BP Lougheed Highway in Burnaby.
Oh, now I have to show up.
That's right. So it's, well, Clay, you gonna make the trip?
You know, I would love to, but I will be thinking of you, Chris, you, Matt, and all the Canucks fans there. From balmy minus 30 Saskatoon, where I will be this week.
Wow, that you got it harsh, man.
You're back to your exile, Clay.
Well, that's true. Don't record too many podcasts without me, you hear?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to do a daily one, especially a special Canucks tweet-up edition.
We better see what Nicole's doing in the next couple of days.
All well, right, I bet you she'll be at the tweet-up.
I see the writing on the wall, guys.
Don't worry. We still like you.
You're our David Booth, Clay. You'll have to work your way back into our good graces.
Okay, well, I think that's it. Final words, Matt.
David Booth better get his act together.
Clay.
David Booth better get his act together.
Personally, I'm not entirely sure David Booth is ever going to get his act together. But the one thing I do ask you to do is get yourself together, get on iTunes, leave us feedback. It's very easy to find us. If you're looking for us on Twitter, obviously, I'm Chris Golden at Lightforce. We got Clay, who's at Canuck Clay, and Matt, who's at MattLee980. Follow the blog, CanucksHockey.com. You can follow our podcast specifically, and that's at C4CHB.com. We are all over Facebook, facebook.com/CanucksHockey. We are pretty much taking over the world, guys.
Slowly but surely, we will get there.
One podcast at a time.
Awesome. So with that, we're out.
And that's it for another episode of C4 from CHB. On behalf of CanucksHockeyBlog.com, I am Chris Golden signing off. Please leave us great feedback wherever you go, iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook.
Oh my God.
Good luck keeping up with us. Amateurs.